bathroom door opened, and Muriel looked roguishly round it. She was allowing only her face to show, for the body was dressed in her rose-coloured dressing gown, and under her dressing gown she wore her shoulder-strapped corset cover over her petticoat, and she was coyly thinking of the moment when the removal of the dressing gown would reveal her bare arms and shoulders. She peered round the door.
When Laidlaw reached the cell, the door was slightly open. He paused with the cup of tea he was carrying and listened. He could hear Milligan's voice.
"Come on, son," he was saying. "Do yourself a favor. You're from the high jump anyway. Your fancy man must have been into something, so tell us."
"You can't hurt him, didn't you know? They found him with his throat like Joey Brown's mouth."
"He'd got it. Made a hell of a mess of the carpet."
Laidlaw put his cup down, carefully, at the edge of the corridor, not to spill the sugar lumps. He pushed open the door.
"You shouldn't have opened that door to come out," Laidlaw said. "You should have crawled under it."
Burton's final few days had begun when he and his wife of only 13 months, 37-year-old Sally Hay, had returned to their home in Saarney, Switzerland, for a fortnight's holiday before they were due to travel to Berlin for 4 weeks of filming on location. Saarney in August is a beautiful place, and the Burtons were enjoying their midsummer sojourn, especially as their friend, the English character actor John Hurt, was filming in nearby Geneva. Both actors were simply blowing off steam that Friday evening, and by all accounts it was no different to any other boozy night out he had enjoyed with friends in Saarney many times over the years. It was 2 o'clock the following morning before the pair returned to the house, both paralytically drunk. A letter from F. Scott Fitzgerald, quarantined in 1920 in the south of France during the Spanish influenza outbreak. "Dearest Rosemary, it was a limpid, dreary day hung as in a basket from a single dull star. I thank you for your letter. Outside, I perceive what may be a collection of fallen leaves tussling against a trash can. It rings like jazz to my ears. The streets are that empty. It seems as though the bulk of the city has retreated to their quarters. Rightfully so. At this time, it seems very poignant to avoid all public spaces. Even the bars, as I told Hemingway, but to that he punched me in the stomach, to which I asked if he had washed his hands. He hadn't. There once was a kid named Peter. He lived in a quiet neighborhood with his dog, Horace. Every night after dinner, Peter would eat an apple and throw the seeds out of the window. But Peter didn't know the seeds were magical." Dangerfield, stopping in front of a gray-haired assistant, who leans forward eagerly.
"Good day, sir. Can I be of any help?"
Dangerfield, hesitating with pursed lips. "Good day. Yes, I'd like to open up an account with you."
"Oh, very good, sir. Will you please come this way?"
The assistant, opening a large ledger across the counter, asking Dangerfield's name and address.
"Shall I bill you monthly or quarterly, sir?"
"I think quarterly."
"Would you like to take anything with you today, sir?"
Dangerfield, caressing his teeth together, his eyes darting among the shelves. "Do you have any cork gin?"
"Certainly, sir. Large or small size?"
"Oh, I think the large. I am an old man now. But then I was already past my prime when Arthur was crowned king. The years since then seem to me now more dim and faded than the earlier years, as if my life were a growing tree which burst to flower and leaf with him, and now has nothing more to do than yellow to the grave." While the other passengers got off, I sat at the window trying to see who was there to meet me. It was likely to be my father. Then I caught sight of a face I knew. It was Harry Drew, our foreman, come to meet me. He paused by the newspaper stand.
"The Colonel, he was coming down to meet you, but we had a bit of trouble."
"What sort of trouble?" I inquired.
"The house parlourmaid," he said. "Seems like she committed suicide or something. Anyway, she's dead."
I stared at him. "For God's sake, how did that happen?" "My mistress's eyes are nothing like the sun. Coral is far more red than her lips red.
If snow be white, why then her breasts are dun. If hairs be wires, black wires grow on her head. I have seen roses damasked, red and white, but no such roses see I in her cheeks. And in some perfumes is there more delight than in the breath that from my mistress reeks. I love to hear her speak, yet well I know that music hath a far more pleasing sound. I grant I never saw a goddess go. My mistress, when she walks, treads on the ground, and yet, by heaven, I think my love as rare as any she belied with false compare.